This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. In about half an hour, we'll be talking to Dr. Azmil Tayeb, political scientist at USM, University of Science Malaysia, about the manifesto of Gabungan Rakyat Sarawak. But in the meantime, let's talk about MA63, because yesterday our country celebrated 57 years since formation. The 16th of September marks the date that Peninsular Malaysia joined forces with the East Malaysian states of Sabah, Sarawak to become the country we are today. Now, the Malaysia Agreement of 1963 laid the groundwork for the relationship between the federal government and the states of East Malaysia.
Yeah, but many issues still remain under the MA63, which have remained unresolved over the years, most prominently pertaining to oil revenues. Now, with the political situation in Malaysia in a state of flux, and the vital influence of Sabah and Sarawak in determining who controls Putrajaya, it's more important than ever to understand the federal-state relations with East Malaysia.
So for primer on federal-state relations with Sabah, Sarawak and what the current status is, we speak to Tricia Yeo, the Chief Executive for IDEAS, which stands for the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs. Now, Tricia, we know that state privileges accorded to Sabah, Sarawak are different than other peninsular states, as agreed upon in the MA63. Can you briefly recap for us what the Malaysia Agreement 1963 is all about?
Hi, thanks for having me on. So this agreement laid out certain sort of ground rules for Sabah and Sarawak to come together with Peninsular Malaya and Singapore at the time. Of course, we know that Singapore later left. So that is essentially the reasons for which Sabah and Sarawak have slightly more autonomy than the other states as found within the federal constitution. The agreement itself was also based on other memorandums. So each of the two states of Sabah and Sarawak, they had their own memorandums that they put together. So in Sabah, there were 20 points, and then in Sarawak, there were 18 points. And some of the points within these agreements were such as Sabah and Sarawak immigration laws would actually have precedence over federal law, so they would be able to control their own immigration. And then one of the other points was that while Islam would be the official religion of the federation, Sabah and Sarawak would actually have no official state religion. And the representation of Sabah and Sarawak in the federal government is also supposed to be proportionate to its population. So there were basically some demands that were put down. And I think you can see that even when, you know, that decision was made to form Malaysia, you can see that these two states were already very aware and already very cautious of the rights that they could possibly be giving up by forming a new nation in 1963.
Now, we know many issues have remained unresolved in terms of the implementation of MA63 since Malaysia's inception. Now, how would you assess the progress made by the previous Pakatan Harapan government towards dealing these outstanding issues? And have they been taken up by the current PN government?
So I think it's important to recognize some developments that took place under the Pakatan Harapan administration. So they set up 10 different special select committees, and one of the 10 was on states and federal relations. So I think that was like a very big step in terms of anything related to federal state relations. There was no previous example of this having been done under Barisan Nasional. So that was quite exciting. So most of the members were actually from Sabah and Sarawak. But the second more important one, if you're speaking directly about MA63, was a special cabinet committee on MA63 that was formed in October 2018. I think there was a lot of focus and attention given to this special cabinet committee, because it was actually contained in their manifesto, the fact that they wanted to iron out a lot of the MA63 concerns, and the amendment of Article 1, Subsection 2 of the Constitution was actually one of the initiatives under this cabinet committee. They reportedly said that out of the 21 issues identified by the cabinet committee, 17 out of the 21 were actually resolved. I mean, it would be interesting to know, you know, what has the status been under the current and new Perikatan National Government. And I think the Perikatan National Government has also said that they will no longer have a special cabinet committee on MA63. Instead, they have said that they will be setting up a special council on MA63. But since that announcement, I have not I don't remember reading anything more detailed than that. So we don't know, like, you know, who's part of this special counsel, who is heading it. You know, is it going to be like a high level counsel that's really headed by the prime minister and so on? So I think there are a lot more questions about the current administration's intention of ironing out the details.
Tricia, to what extent has there been headway made by the PN government in terms of Sarawak and oil and gas revenue?
So under PH administration, Sarawak imposed this sales tax on oil and gas, and Petronas actually at the time refused to pay to Sarawak because I think the board, if I'm not mistaken, felt that they were already making royalty payments as legally required. And so there was like a court case that ensued between the Sarawak state government and Petronas and the federal government. And this was not resolved, you know, at the time when PH, of course, collapsed in February 2020. Following that, I think when PN came into power, to their credit, they were able to resolve that issue where Petronas actually have agreed to pay the sales tax to the Sarawak state government. That at least one part of the equation has been resolved. What I hear, though, is that Sabah apparently has a similar, you know, enactment within the state that I believe it also intends to pursue with regards to the sales tax. So that would be very interesting to watch whether the Sabah state government actually intends to pursue legally with Petronas, and also what Petronas' response would be. I mean, also bearing in mind that, you know, Petronas is the guardian of national resources by virtue of the Petroleum Development Act. And we also know how much Petronas actually has been contributing to our budget annually. And also bearing in mind that Petronas has most recently posted not very good, you know, financial results. So I think there's a lot to think about with regards to the future of financial planning for the federal government and for the rest of the peninsula, and of course with Sabah and Sarawak.
Given the financial squeeze faced by the federal government due to the current economic situation, Tricia, are we unlikely to see a greater economy for states, including Sabah and Sarawak, to manage their own finances then?
In the writings that I've put forward, I have said that it's actually not sustainable for the states to continue depending on the federal government. So some of the states, especially the poorer ones, they are quite heavily indebted to the federal government. It's essentially a financial equation that doesn't quite work, because apart from the 9th schedule, there's also the 10th schedule in the Constitution, which outlines how the finances are supposed to be split. So how much of the taxation federal government is supposed to take and how much states are supposed to take. So states actually don't take any income tax. States don't take any corporate tax. Or even consumption tax, right? All of that goes to the federal government's consolidated fund. The only tax that the states do collect would be like on property. So things like, you know, your quit rent, your assessment fees and all that, that goes to local and state governments. But I think there's an argument to be made for asking the question of, you know, is there a way that there can be some kind of distribution that the state governments can benefit from? Because the poorer states that don't have, you know, they can't benefit from high property value, for instance, the way that Selangor and Penang do, the poorer states, they will invariably look at their own natural resources, right? Because that's one of the ways that they can fund themselves. And that's not environmentally friendly, neither is it sustainable for, you know, the ecology of the future of the country. Going back to your question, whether or not federal government will give up any of its finances given its current squeeze, I don't think it can at the current moment, but I think it should also think about the long-term impact that this will have on the states. Some kind of solution needs to emerge that will benefit both levels at the federal and the states.
Thanks so much, Tricia. That was Tricia Yeo, Chief Executive for IDEAS, which is the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs. Up next, we'll talk to Danny Ives, the Managing Director for Equities Research at Wedbush Securities, on Apple's latest announcements on its watch and iPad last night. That's happening after the 7:30 News AM Bulletin. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.